People are actually losing their homes and asking to rent in our apartments.
The biggest obstacle is, of course, lack of funds.
We think we've helped 58,000 people.
We're constantly having a greater demand for affordable housing.
Welcome to the Affordable Housing Podcast, brought to you by Eden Housing.
State and federal budgets are never easy, but this year the process seems especially challenging. At every level of government, spending is being cut back, and housing programs are not being spared. Hi, I'm Joanne Green, and on this episode of the Affordable Housing Podcast, I'm speaking with Barbara Burnham, Vice President of Federal Policy for LISC, the Local Initiatives Support Corporation, about the federal housing budgets and upcoming policy challenges. First, some background on LISC and Barbara. The Local Initiatives Support Corporation helps to transform distressed neighborhoods into healthy, sustainable communities of choice and opportunity, good places to work, do business, and raise children. They do this by mobilizing corporate, government, and philanthropic support to provide local community development organizations with grants, loans and investments, policy support, and technical and management assistance. As VP of Federal Policy with LISC in Washington, D.C., Barbara focuses on urban and rural federal housing and community development policy. Formerly, she served as Senior Program Director for the Greater Miami LISC Program and Senior Program Director of Rural LISC. She serves on the boards of Citizen Housing and Planning Association in Massachusetts and the National Rural Housing Coalition. She's a steering committee member of the Campaign for Housing and Community Development Funding, a former board member of the Fannie Mae National Advisory Committee, and the list goes on. But my favorite item in Barbara's bio is that way back when Eden Housing's ED, Linda Mandolini, was a college intern, Barbara sent her to survey vacant lots in Boston. We are pleased to report that the city ultimately built affordable housing on those very lots. Barbara, welcome.
Thank you very much. I'm very happy. I'm very happy to be doing this, particularly with Eden Housing, because I knew when Linda Mandolini was my intern years and years and years ago that she was going to have a fabulous future in affordable housing. And obviously, she's doing terrific work, and folks at Eden Housing are as well. So thank
Great.
You.
Barbara, as we're recording today, the government still has not passed the 2011 budget. At the same time, the administration and Congress are preparing the 2012 budget. Not passing a budget is clearly a dangerous thing for housing, as the new House of Representatives is proposing dramatic cuts for the remainder of this fiscal year. So what specifically may be cut from HUD's budget?
Well, it's very hard to say at this point because the process is extraordinarily fluid. The House and the Senate are still about $50 billion apart in terms of the cuts that they want to see in general from the budget. What we are most concerned about is right now is the Community Development Block Grant Program, which is a bedrock program for communities across the country, both urban and small cities, as well as money that goes into rural America. Also, the whole plethora of Section 8 vouchers. We're particularly concerned about project-based vouchers that work with the layer caking of affordable housing development, and we're very concerned that, in fact, that budget might be slashed as well. The House is in a very different position right now than the Senate. In addition to that, certainly public housing operating funds, other types of support mechanisms for public housing. So it is very fluid right now. The Senate just submitted their bill on Friday, last Friday, the 4th. And it seems a bit better, certainly, than the House bill for housing and community development programs at HUD and at USDA. But we're still extremely concerned about many of the bedrock programs of housing and community development. A very, very fluid situation.
So, Barbara, is it your sense that they're going to continue to make these two-week extensions until they come to an agreement? Or is there even a threat of them just deadlocking and shutting down?
There's always a threat of them shutting down. This second continuing resolution is now, the deadline is now March 18th, which in Congress years is a very, very, very short time. They're still very, very much in negotiations. I know that the White House has become involved as well, in that neither party and neither side of the Hill, the House nor the Senate, want to see a shutdown. But brinksmanship is the word of the day right now in politics in Washington, so there's always a threat of shutdown. If I were a betting woman, I don't think that it will, that the government will be shut down. I do think, however, that we'll see another continuing resolution. I'd love to be wrong. If I'm wrong, I will be thrilled.
If there is a shutdown, what happens to properties that receive monthly operating funds from HUD?
Confusion and chaos. In the HUD right now is obligating as many funds as possible and certainly giving guidance to housing authorities and developers alike to prepare for any scenario. But it certainly will be chaotic given the fact that we're now a good almost halfway through the fiscal year. So how much people will actually receive in contracts, all of which will have to be renegotiated based on the new numbers. Very, very, very precarious situation.
Assuming that Congress can come to some sort of compromise for the remainder of this year, let's look at next year's budget. HUD's overall budget appears to have been increased, but that doesn't mean they didn't cut any programs, right?
Oh, absolutely. No, there are definitely cuts in programs in the FY12 budget. And of course, this is the president's budget. This is the budget that he is proposing. He has continued to propose the funding of his initiatives that came out of his early budgets, things like Choice Neighborhoods, Sustainable Communities, which is the transit-oriented development and really a very innovative program, as well as transforming rental assistance, so that many of those initiatives are proposed to continue to be funded. These, of course, are initiatives that are at risk in the FY11 budget. He has also proposed to cut community development block grant program and the home program. The cuts are not as draconian as they are being proposed to be in the FY11 budget, but still he has proposed to cut those programs.
For California, this is really devastating because mm-hmm. our state is obviously in such bad shape. And also, they're proposing $1 billion worth of cuts in CDBG. Mm-hmm. Is there any way to restore some of those federal funds? I mean, we're really up against the wall here.
Well, the mayors have taken up the banner and are working very, very hard with the administration and with Congress to convince them otherwise, no question about it. We're heavily involved in that coalition. We see that any cuts to CDBG right now as totally devastating, given the fact that state budgets, housing and community development funds and state budgets are, if not already gone, in tremendous jeopardy, and that these bedrock programs, CDBG and HOME, are critical to stay in the budget and be refunded at reasonable levels as opposed to cut.
So the administration's budget includes $1 billion for the National Housing Trust Fund. In mm-hmm. last year's Congress, that program fell 3 votes short of passage. Is there hope of getting it funded this year?
Well, there's always hope of getting something funded. Let me explain the difference, however, with trying to get the trust fund funded, in that the trust fund, the proposal is for mandatory funding. And what that means is that the trust fund organizers do not want to compete with the other HUD programs. They want this funding to be a separate source of revenue. And there have been many, many separate sources of revenue that have been proposed. Right now, folks in the trust fund campaign are looking at a variety of different sources. There's certainly a commitment on the part of the White House to try and find some mandatory funding. Will it be funded this year? I think that it's probably less than a 50-50 chance, but people are investigating every avenue. I think one of the rays of hope, however, is that in the president's proposal on housing finance reform, that it is very clear that he is proposing a source of financing, source of funding that would support the intent of the trust fund. So that the drumbeat is not going to go away if the trust fund is not able to receive funding this year.
Yeah, I understand the administration's proposing the reform of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, which the National Low Income Housing Coalition says could be a mechanism for funding the housing trust. Can you talk about how that might work?
Yeah, what is being proposed within the president's proposal is a funding mechanism that would fund not only a trust fund like or a trust fund like funding stream, but down payment assistance, housing counseling, all of the gap financing, if you will, or support mechanisms that would support the principles of his proposal, which really are about transparency, reaching all communities, access to credit, principles that we all know and love, that holds the private sector accountable, as well as the public sector accountable.
But how important really are Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac to affordable housing and the creation of affordable apartments?
Well, Fannie and Freddie really set, certainly in rental housing, Fannie and Freddie really set the standard in the as the private sector. Let's just use one example as a good example, that small rental properties, which have been traditionally always incredibly difficult to finance. Freddie and Fannie, although not as robust as some of us would have liked to have seen, that Freddie and Fannie really set the standard for providing capital and financing for the financing of smaller rental properties and affordable rental properties. What we would certainly like to see in any kind of reform of housing finance is not only reforms to the secondary markets and to home ownership, but to the access to capital for rental housing as well. And what is being proposed by the president is the phasing out of Fannie and Freddie and the expansion and modifications and certainly access to capital through FHA in multifamily housing.
Barbara, last year HUD proposed transforming the way that public housing authorities can renovate public housing by providing them with the opportunity to finance renovations using private debt and tax credits. Unfortunately, that proposal didn't go anywhere. Is there any hope for reviving it in the next budget?
Oh, absolutely. It may be called something new in that it is proposed to be funded in the FY12 budget. I think that HUD and those supporters in Congress have recognized that it wasn't the proposal that was made was A, people didn't understand it in its entirety. B, it needed a lot more heat time on the stove than it had. There were certainly policy and ideological conversations that had to go on about ownership and private debt in public housing, and an overall look at public housing as to what it is now and what it will be in the future. The proposal that HUD made initially, and they continue to make, is a voluntary proposal, and there are many housing authorities that are very, very open to the concept. There are also many housing authorities out there, and most of them being the smaller housing authorities that are not in favor of it and really need to have more time to think it through. And certainly Congress needs quite a bit more time to understand what HUD and what the president really intended. So could it happen this year? Possibly. Is HUD taking another relook at what it means to them? Absolutely. And how this would work. The future of housing finance is certainly going to depend far more on the private sector and private debt. So the leveraging of private sector investment is going to be critical, not only to nonprofit developed housing, but certainly and potentially to public housing going forward.
Interesting. The administration's budget proposed some changes to the low-income housing tax credit program. Mm-hmm. Can you describe those and comment on how they might be helpful for the program?
Sure. As many of the listeners probably know, that getting tax credit deals done in rural areas has been difficult for many, many reasons. And one of the proposals that the administration has made and HUD has made in the budget is a 30% basis boost with 4% credits that would encourage more investment into rural areas. One of the concerns about that proposal is really the small state caps and whether or not this money would, in fact, if it were to be equitably distributed, whether or not there would be enough money in small states that very often are have quite a bit of rural area, whether or not it would be helpful. And we're working through that at this point as well, and talking through those issues with HUD and with Congress. The second proposal is really a mixed income proposal that many people have been talking about for quite some time, to allow low-income housing tax credit developments to dig more deeply into lower-income folks. It's a very ambitious proposal. It has a number of issues that are being discussed right now in terms of how far down does it go? Does it go down to 30%? Does it go down to 40% as the proposal is being made now in the budget? How far up would the income go? And what are the compliance issues, and what would the overall cost of meeting those compliance issues be? So they're both very interesting proposals, and I think intended to expand the ability, both in rural areas as well as expand the ability to reach down even further into a low-income demographic in tax credit properties, but certainly still under discussion both in the housing world and the tax world.
So, Barbara, do you think that the budget challenges we're facing at the state and federal levels are a temporary shift after this horrendous recession, or do you think we're going to see a fundamental shift in how affordable housing is financed and created in the future?
Oh, I think we're going to see a fundamental shift, no question about it. With the Dodd-Frank bill, in terms of consumer finance and many of the consumer issues around access to services and what have you, that then the natural second stage is to look at housing finance. We are definitely going to see a shift. What that shift means, and what that shift means in terms of access to credit geographically, and that brings in the Community Reinvestment Act, and what will happen with community reinvestment on either a regulatory basis or a legislative basis. That I think that in terms of watching, listening, and participating in conversations, it is absolutely critical for affordable housing developers to be involved in this conversation. The proposal that the president has put out, and many of the proposals that you see out that either counter the president's proposal or support the president's proposal, are focused on homeownership, and that multifamily housing finance is receiving, I don't want to say short shrift, but certainly not receiving as much ink as homeownership. So I think it's really incumbent upon all of us who are interested in multifamily, the changes in financing of multifamily housing, to be involved in and listening to that conversation all from day one.
So our listeners are pretty much all affordable housing advocates. Is there anything that they can do at this point in the immediate to prevent the cuts in either of the HUD budgets?
Pick up the phone. Many of the listeners, I'm sure, have relationships with their district congressional staff. They've invited them to groundbreakings and what have you, and go to them for assistance and support. It is critically important, and I say this with strong emphasis, that it is critically important right now to be talking to Congress, in that there are many new Congress people who also have very new staff who don't understand the programs, the housing programs, and the impact of cutting one program with another. It's really incumbent upon us to sit down and mentor folks, to have them understand how the programs work. And to a certain degree, and I was in a meeting the other day where I said to someone who said, well, you know, we just have to cut this and cut that and cut this, and you folks have to decide what you want to cut. I said back to him, this is not an issue of which child gets thrown off the train. This is an issue of making sure that there's a package that works. So folks really need to get involved and keep informed, and I think these podcasts are terrific to keep people up to date on what is going on, because things are happening very quickly in Washington, and they will continue to do so. So
can people keep updated by going to your website?
Certainly, somewhat. We can't keep up with all of it, but we put quite a bit of information on our website. There are also all kinds of other websites. NCSHA does a terrific job from the perspective of the housing finance agencies. The National Income Housing Coalition puts out memos to members once a week online, so that everybody can read that. The housing authorities, both the national organizations, NARO, CLAFA, put out alerts. I will actually send you for the Eden website a list of websites that people can take a look at depending on their orientation, because there are probably 15 to 20 websites that people can take a look at.
That's great, and we will post those on the Eden site. Barbara Burnham, thank you so much for your insights today.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and make sure all the listeners call their congresspeople.
Excellent. Barbara Burnham, Vice President of Federal Policy for LISC, the Local Initiatives Support Corporation. For Eden Housing, I'm Joanne Green.
SmarterPodcasts.com. Delivering sound advice.